Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Hot Iron, was written by Joseph Mindell with quotations from Zola and His Time by Matthew Josephson, published by the Macaulay Company.
When he was young, he wrote pretty stories for children, but he grew older.
I am no maker of fairy tales, and I feel that the only way to attack evil is with a hot iron.
He was a hot iron, pouring out his passion to flood a world grown indifferent to evil.
First, I place a nail, and then with a stroke of the hammer, I drive this nail an inch into the brain of the public. And then with another stroke, I make it go another inch.
Loved and hated, honored and reviled, he expended the years of his life in setting the nails of truth.
It is only a man who makes an impression, not a book. We need men, not books.
His name was Émile Zola, writer of books, and a man. You could see him 100 years ago, almost anywhere in Paris, in the streets of the poor, the salons of the wealthy, high on the rooftops in the glow of the city's lights, down in the odorous dark of the Paris sewers. You might have seen Émile Zola one day in Les Halles, the great sprawling markets where the food is brought that nourishes the city.
Madame, pardon me.
Oh, me?
Yes, I wanted to ask you...
Oh, madame, he said. Say, did you hear him? Oh, shut up, all of you. Now, what do you want?
Tell me, do you lift these barrels of fish by yourself?
And maybe you'd like to help me?
Why, but of course, I'll just take off my coat.
Never mind. You dirty your fine clothes.
Tell me, what do you do with the spoiled fish?
Here, what are you doing writing all of this stuff? Why, you're an inspector.
Make him show his papers, Suzette.
Believe me, but, Suzette, I only ask because I want to know.
Be on your way. We don't like Snoop. Don't answer us, Suzette.
Mind your own business. Oh, they mean well, monsieur. They're rough people.
Will you answer me, Suzette?
You tell me why you want to know.
Oh, it is a fair bargain. I want the world to know how you labor, all of you, how you struggle and suffer.
You're angry, monsieur.
Oh, injustice and indifference always makes me angry.
Then you must be angry very often.
And you, what about you?
Me? Oh, I do not know, monsieur. Maybe I'm too tired to be angry. Besides, I don't expect people to be concerned about me and my struggles.
They must be concerned. I will make them concerned.
Yes? You are perhaps of the Chamber of Deputies.
No, Madame Suzette. I am a novelist.
Give it up, my dear Zola. You are no novelist.
No.
It is my considered opinion as a literary critic of, if I may say so, of no little standing.
And of no few words.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, granted, since you cannot help yourself.
I don't know why I bother to talk to you.
Perhaps because my novels disturb your equilibrium.
Your novels, as you call them, are nothing but collections of filth and obscenity.
Everything I have written is true.
Sordid accounts of sordid misery.
My method is to show life as it really is.
Ah, yes. We know Zola, the observer, with his pencil and notebook in the literary salon at the soiree of society.
And also in the sewers of Paris.
Each man to his taste.
Truth is not a matter of taste.
Utterly irrelevant. A writer should seek to entertain his readers, to uplift, to stir the higher emotions.
Yes, yes, I agree. The highest emotions. Compassion for suffering. Sympathy for the weak. Wonder at the passion for life. Hatred for falsehood. Anger at injustice.
My dear Zola, you are too full of hatred to be a writer.
Hatred is wholesome and good. It is the indignation of those who are outraged by mediocrity and stupidity.
You make yourself plain, Monsieur Zola. I will be equally blunt. I shall do everything I can to cut short your career. Now let your anger boil.
No. I tell you this calmly and with the utmost certainty. You cannot kill a book or words that speak the truth. You can try to bury them through silence or scandal, but they will be revived in their time.
Year by year, book after book, the words of truth accumulated. They were read not only in France, but all over the world. And of those who read them, many cursed him, others were frightened. And some wept in the presence of understanding. For if, as he thought, his novels were based on the methods of science, his portraits were painted with the passion of poetry. Émile Zola prepared himself day by day for the next work. Or perhaps the world in which he lived prepared him, as it was preparing another man, 20 years younger, for the role he was to play.
My military record, mon général.
Yes, 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 I have it here before me.
My rating in the tests of the War College is among the highest.
Come to the point, Captain. What is it you want?
A post on the general staff of the army.
Well, that does not seem advisable now at this time.
Am I to take this as a denial of my request, sir?
Don't be so touchy. I speak as one who has your interest at heart. You people shouldn't be so aggressive, so eager to push yourselves forward.
I am asking for nothing more than that to which my record and my grades in the War College entitle me.
Of course, I'm not arguing with that, but consider, you would be the only Jew on the general staff.
Mon général, I am an officer of the French army as well as a Jew.
In short, you insist, eh? Very well. According to the regulations by which I am bound, you will be on the general staff.
Thank you, mon général.
Wait, I haven't finished. Remember what I tell you now. You may yet come to regret your insistence, Captain Dreyfus.
The convergence of two lives was still in the future. Émile Zola had never heard of the young captain of artillery, but he knew the France in which both lived, and the atmosphere in which a royalist, anti-republican, anti-Semitic newspaper could call itself, with impudent irony, free speech.
We know whose sinister manipulations have brought about the present financial crisis, and we know what should be done with this alien race.
Zola knew what it was to hear now and then in the streets of Paris new and dangerous sounds. And in these times, with these sounds in his ears, Zola sat down to write a newspaper article.
Émile, maybe it would be better not to publish this article now.
Go on. I'm listening.
Well, the very title itself, Pour les Juifs. For the Jews.
You don't like the title?
At a time like this, when there's so much feeling, maybe it's not expedient.
No?
What I mean is, your new book is coming out soon. You see?
I see. I must be still now, so as not to displease people who might buy my book. I must be expedient. Only, it is very inconsiderate of the Jews to choose this time to be mistreated and persecuted, isn't it, Henri? Isn't it?
Émile, I was only thinking of your good.
I know, my friend. Therefore, I must speak out for my sake and for the sake of those who do not speak.
Few spoke out, and even fewer knew of the events of the autumn of 1894, when it was discovered that a member of the French General Staff was selling information to Germany. Certainly, Émile Zola did not know of the investigation, nor the trial, nor the outcome.
The prisoner will rise. Captain Dreyfus, you have been found guilty of espionage and treason.
I am innocent.
Silence! Alfred Dreyfus, you are sentenced to imprisonment for the remainder of your natural life and to be degraded from the commission you dishonored and from the army of the French Republic.
Adjutant, tear the insignia from his uniform.
You are degrading an innocent man.
His sword, Adjutant. Break it in two.
I am innocent. Long live France. Long live the army!
Here it is, Emile. The short item on the back page.
What about it, Henri?
We'll read it.
Oh, it pleases you to be mysterious. This one? A prison ship departed today for Devil's Island, carrying the former officer convicted of espionage, Alfred Dreyfus. All right, I've read it. It would appear that there was a spy among the general staff.
That seems to be reasonably clear.
And this, what's-his-name, Dreyfus, was tried and convicted, that's all.
Not quite all, Emile.
I am not so obtuse, my friend, that I do not see where you are leading. Dreyfus is a spy. Not a Jewish spy.
But that is precisely the point. There are people who say...
There are always such people. Only, I do not expect that all Jews or all Christians or all Frenchmen will be virtuous.
And Dreyfus is not virtuous?
According to the public record, he is guilty.
Yes, I know.
You are troubled, my friend.
Maybe it's I who am obtuse, Emile. You wrote Pour le Juif.
Because I am against the persecution of Jews for being Jews, of any people for being what they are.
Yet now you seem to be indifferent.
Only, if a man is honest, he is my friend. If he is a thief, I do not defend him.
Maybe it is not always clear who is a thief. In any case, you have given me a powerful motive to remain honest. Emile, you didn't hear a word I said.
Hmm? Oh, I was thinking, Henri, how it must be there, on Devil's Island.
Guard. Guard.
What do you want?
There have been no letters. Why have there been no letters from home?
You ask me every day. I told you the commandant...
I want to know what is happening. I must know.
It's no use to ask me.
They have forgotten. They have forgotten.
You must not ask me. I am not permitted to talk to you. Do you hear?
I do not understand.
Dreyfus, they have not forgotten. Listen, you have friends in France.
Monsieur Zola, not one of us knows Alfred Dreyfus as a man.
I myself have never even seen him.
Yes, that's right. The Dreyfus has need of friends, Monsieur Zola. He is innocent.
Monsieur Lazare, you ask me to decide between two unequal alternatives.
Was it not you who wrote, in the matter of truth, there is no choice?
Well, yes, I must believe either that Dreyfus is guilty, or I must believe that a dozen men in the highest places in the army and the government have conspired to commit an act so dark and so evil that the mind refuses to accept it? What am I to think?
Think, Monsieur Zola, that there was espionage, that the general staff needed a spy, and that they found Dreyfus, a Jew.
Lazare, he was tried by a French court and convicted.
Yes. We will not take any more of your time.
Wait! You have more to tell me?
A great deal more.
I want to hear it.
All the evidence against Dreyfus was not revealed to him or to anyone in order, the court said, to avoid difficulties with Germany.
Some of the evidence was false. For example, the handwriting of the intercepted message from the spy.
And some was entirely suppressed. Evidence about another man, the real spy. Do you want to hear more, Monsieur Zola?
Gentlemen, I thank you. Let us make plans. There is work to be done.
On Devil's Island, a man moldered in a solitary cell, his hair grayed and his mind at times wandering. In Paris, a few men who did not know Alfred Dreyfus, who knew only a victim of injustice, a few men abandoned everything else and worked friends of justice to find new evidence and shout it to the people of France.
Silence has become impossible. Truth is on the march, and nothing will stop her.
Zola wrote words of fire, and the flames died at the wall of public resistance. When the elders of France seemed willing to sacrifice truth to save the general staff, Zola wrote an appeal to the young people. And youth answered as their fathers did, drowning the voices of the few who followed Zola after justice.
Close the window, Henri! Gentlemen, I will finish reading my article for tomorrow's paper. I accuse the general staff of the monstrous crime of convicting an innocent man. I accuse the handwriting experts of having made lying and fraudulent reports, unless a medical examination will certify them to be deficient of sight and judgment. I accuse the War Office of having led a vile campaign in the press in order to misdirect public opinion. And lastly, I accuse the court martials of having violated all human right in condemning a prisoner on testimony kept secret from him.
Monsieur Zola, it is masterful.
Wait, Lazar, wait. I have not finished. As to the men I accuse, I do not know them. I have never seen them. I feel neither resentment nor hatred against them. I have one passion only, for light, in the name of humanity, which has borne so much and has a right to happiness. Well, what do you think, gentlemen?
If any words can move the people of France, these are the words.
If, Lazare, if... Well, you have lost faith in the power of words, then. When they are true words, listen. There is one more paragraph. In making these accusations, I am aware that I render myself liable to Articles 30 and 31 of the libel laws, which punish acts of defamation. I expose myself voluntarily. I am waiting.
You won't have long to wait, Monsieur Zola. The government will bring you to trial.
Good, isn't that what we want?
We who are here with you, what can we say? It is you who will be on trial.
Yes, it is something to think about. But once in court, we can reopen the case of Dreyfus and let the free air blow away the smell of evil. You do not say anything, Lazar.
For so long we've been thinking of Alfred Dreyfus. Now I find my thoughts are of Emile Zola.
Oh, then put them out of your mind. Our only concern is that the people of France will have the opportunity to hear the truth.
Oh, listen, Emile. There are you, people of France. Prosecuting attorney and judge and jury at the trial of Emile Zola.
Counsel for the defense will limit himself to the point at issue.
But, Your Honor, my question goes to the heart of the matter. The handwriting on the intercepted message
from... The question will not be put. There will be no discussion of matters already judged.
I will prove that Alfred Dreyfus...
The question will not be put.
Madame Dreyfus, I will ask you to tell the court whether your husband was in Paris at the
question
time...
Question will not be put.
I demand the right accorded to murderers and thieves to call witnesses, to have them heard.
The defendant will be seated. It is not your place to speak.
Someone must speak out.
You will obey the law of this court.
I do not know your law. I do not want to know it.
Please, please, Emile, control yourself. If the court please, I will repeat the question.
The question will not be put. The question will not be put.
The defendant may make his statement to the jury.
Emile. Speak now, Emile.
Gentlemen, if I am here before you, it is because I wish to be, desiring of my own free will that the whole obscure and monstrous affair be brought before your jurisdiction. I tell you, Dreyfus is innocent. At this solemn hour, before this tribunal, which represents human justice before all France, before the entire world, I swear that Dreyfus is innocent. I desire that my country take no longer the way of deception and injustice. I may be sentenced here, and someday France will thank me for having helped to save her honor.
Quickly, Emile. A carriage is waiting at the side door. Emile!
Oh, is it any use when they don't listen? The verdict was ready from the beginning.
Hurry! There's no time to lose.
Then I am to go to prison. So be it. Still, they will hear my voice.
If you don't come at once, Emile, no one will ever hear your voice again.
What? What are you saying, Lazare?
The mob is waiting for you at the front steps. We will leave by the side.
No.
Please, Emile, no heroics. I don't have your courage.
Are you afraid of them?
I don't exaggerate. They will tear you to pieces.
I'll tell you something. The sight of blood has always made me ill, and the thought of anyone's pain puts me in torment. I am also afraid, Lazare.
Then come quickly before they find you.
But if fear is such a terrible thing, we could have been expedient. And silent. Open the door. Open it, Lazare. Here I am. What do you want of me? You have sent Alfred Dreyfus to a living death. If you take my life as well, what will you be killing? Emile Zola? An ugly man with a ragged beard and a habit of speaking many words? No! You will be murdering truth and burying justice and making a world for yourselves and your children in which fear and darkness will swallow all that remains of the humanity of human beings. Listen to me, my countrymen. Life does not flourish in the midst of falsehood, and strength does not arise out of injustice. Do not be afraid, my brothers. I tell you that a nation, a world, can live and be strong only when it throws the light of day upon the truth.
Emile Zola fought evil with a hot iron, pouring out his passion to flood a world grown indifferent to evil. In his time, the wrong that was done to Alfred Dreyfus, and thereby to all men, was undone by a world that he awakened. When he died, many mourned who once cursed. And these words were spoken at his grave.
He was, for a moment, the conscience of men.
Thank you.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Fisher Abramson, a prominent community leader of New Bedford, Massachusetts, and a member of the Board of Overseers of the Jewish Theological Seminary. Mr. Abramson.
We have no choice in the matter of truth. That sentence seems to me to sum up the life of Emil Zola. For no matter what he directed his attention to, he faced it with uncompromising honesty. In his novels about the miserable social and economic conditions of France, in his brave defense of Alfred Dreyfus against the entire general staff of the French army, Zola allowed neither comfort nor cowardice to stand in the way of the principles of justice and right by which he guided his life. Vilified because of his steadfast stand against corruption and dishonesty, his way won in the end. His political courage in the famous Dreyfus affair remains a living example of the power of truth over falsehood, of honesty over corruption, of idealism over expediency. It is very easy to be on the side of right when one is not directly involved. It is very easy to deplore dishonesty and lack of principle when one is an impartial observer or in no danger of being victimized by such behavior. Very little courage is needed to speak out against injustices taking place halfway around the world so that one's stand involves no personal danger. What requires courage is to stand up against the forces of evil, where keeping silent would mean safety, and where speaking out means involvement in a situation in which one has no direct personal concern. Fortunately, there are men of courage who believe that truth cannot be ignored for personal gain, who are not afraid to sacrifice their safety to uphold the principles which are the basis upon which man's dignity rests. But if we are ever to see an end to the injustice and cruelty which abound around us, we must all in our daily lives fight for truth and justice. It is not merely through the efforts of a few men of courage, but through the efforts of all men everywhere, that the impulses for evil will be outweighed by those for good.
Thank you, Mr. Abramson.